Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome everyone to Sports Talk Sunday here on Trenton White Sports, a.k.a. Blog Talk Radio's Buffalo Water Cooler. Got a good show tonight. Got some Buffalo Bills on the winning track. Yes, it's against Miami. Miami's struggling. Are the Bills really that good? Are they getting better? Or do Miami just stink that much? But after putting up a lot of points, you got to give Buffalo some credit. They look like the team that they were, let's say, a few weeks ago. We'll just see how long that goes. Got a lot of high school sports to talk about, really. If it weren't for the pros, this whole show would be about high school sports right now. We had some very interesting high school games over the weekend, and I want to talk a little bit about those. And the refs, pretty tough to really criticize kids, but I'm one that's a firm believer when a kid gets in high school sports and their main objective is to get to college and play, I think it's a learning experience. I mean, what's the difference of a kid playing a high school sport doing something wrong and you criticize them or getting on them to get better? It's a life lesson. If you go to your job, you're not doing the job. You get fired. You get talked to. You get coaching or whatever they do. Get written up. It's part of growing up. This isn't a candy-coated world. And I think high school players and coaches, kids especially, kids who are playing varsity football, I think are, to me, fair game when it comes to constructive criticism. I don't know about some people. Some people are a little bit softer on that stance. I'm hard on my own kids, you know, and if they're doing something bad, I something wrong and someone criticizes them, I may not like it, but I know they're on that stage and they're being held to a higher standard. I think starting football players on a varsity team that's doing well, they're held to a higher standard. They get praised when they do right, but what happens is when they don't do right, you know, fans want to kind of back off, and it can't be that way because the world's not like that. So I'm for, you know, getting on a kid who's done something wrong in the game. The kid you fouled all year, he's a senior or junior, heading off to college to play football. It gets even worse at the next level. So I'm okay with it as long as it's not really vindictive and nasty. I'm okay with a kid getting criticized because at the next level, it becomes that in the press. They don't hide the name in college. They say who you are, and you lose your job. School spends a lot of money on you, and you don't perform, you're going to get canned, and you're going to get criticized by the local media and the fans. Those things happen. But I want to talk about, like I said, high school football, Buffalo Bills today. I'd like to thank my my sponsors, Coca-Cola and Schneider's Pretzels of Pennsylvania, all my fans who keep me informed, keep me on my toes, and criticize me when I say something wrong. Look, I'm a straight shooter. I don't mean to be rude sometimes, but the truth hurts, and I'm going to, you know, tell you the way I see it. A lot of these stations out here and guys don't want to do that, and I think that's bunk because why are you doing your job then if you're not going to tell the truth? And, you know, my rant on Lancaster a few weeks ago, starting to turn around, got some positive results. It's in the past, you know, but I want to talk about Orchard Park here, heading up to Rochester, and, you know, Aquinas just won a very close game against Rush Henrietta. And I just don't see how any double-A team this year from West New York goes to Rochester and actually wins one of those games. I think it's going to be tough. I think it's just tough up there this year. I think Aquinas is hungry. I don't know if they're going to win it all. I think Rochester is really tough, and I think Rochester really has the teams up there right now that we don't have. But, you know, I got some good guys coming in, by the way. James Rand, sports writer for High School Sports. We're going to do a high school recap. We got the kid coming in also. He's going to talk some Buffalo Bills and NFL. Speaking of the NFL, let's talk about this. I think the Oakland Raiders might be back. And when I say they might be back, you got to look at it. They lost today 38-35, but from where they're coming from, their future looks pretty good. It looks pretty good. You see teams who take a while, who are really bad for a few years, they're a joke, and then they start getting serious. And I'm telling you right now, I think Carr's the real deal. He's young. He's getting more experience. I think Carr's going to be a very good quarterback for Oakland, and I think that's the kind of quarterback they need, kind of gritty, just a hard-nosed quarterback. I mean, guy comes up, and, you know, this guy's just looking pretty darn good. I think Carr's the real deal. I tell a lot of people, you know, Oakland's coming up. You know, they're alive in stock for a long time. And you look at the draft picks, you know, you got veterans like Crabtree. They're looking pretty darn good, and I think they're coming back. I mean, look, Cam Newton, another team. Carolina Panthers, they're the real deal. Look, you could have wrote them off 2 weeks ago and said what you wanted to say. Oh, you know, we've seen this before. No, not in week eight you didn't. They're undefeated. And to me, they really rolled the Packers. Yeah, the Packers kept it close for a bit. But look, Cam Newton's looking like an MVP candidate. Now, you could put him in a conversation. I'm not saying he isn't right now, thanks to Tom Brady, but if it weren't for New England, I'm telling you right now, the Carolina Panthers would be, as far as power ratings, to me, number one. And I think they're getting better each week. You got the Packers who are fighting on the sidelines. I mean, it was a good game, but you see a lot of frustration these days, and you see more and more in the NFL. I think it's a bad example for the kids. More players getting in each other's faces. Look, I get it. It's competitive. I play ball. I know. But when you're on the world stage, or let's say the stage here in the U.S., you don't do that. You have a ton of kids watching you, and, you know, the domestic violence, and, you know, I don't mind hard football, but when you start fighting your own teammates, that's horrible. We're going to have, in 30 seconds here, Patrick Moran come in here, Mix 96, very good sports writer here, and thank God, because I thought I was the only real high school guy here besides the local guys who most people, you know, here, just because they have to, they come to me, and, you know, I'm going to tell it like it is, but I'm going to really get into it because I know a lot of these kids. We help these kids, James and I. James does his thing, I do mine. We help these kids get to school, so we have the intimate knowledge of a lot of these kids. And it was very good for me to see these kids playing the Ralph Wilson Stadium. But there's one game I'm going to bring Patrick on right now. One game I want to talk about, and I told people as soon as I seen the matchup, I said Maple Grove is a good football team. No one wanted to hear me. I said, let me tell you something right now. They're a good team. That is their division to me. I mean, between them and Randolph, you know, flip a coin. It's a good team. Not surprised at all they won. Maybe surprised how they won. Coach McDuffie not happy about the game. Felt he was robbed, and you could have a case for inconsistent play calling that kind of trickled down to the Double-A game against Ken West and Ultra Park. But the refs take a lot of heat. But I think they missed a lot of calls in this playoffs for a lot of teams. But let's bring Patrick in. Like I said, good sports writer for high school sports. Patrick, welcome for the first time to the Trent White Sports Radio Show, a.k.a. the Buffalo Water Cooler. Welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Thanks. It's good to be here. Sounds great. Weekend at the Ralph, that's for sure.
Hey, I tell you, let's get right into it. Let's start with the Bennett game. South Park, really, there was no question. I figured they'd win that game. I think they may go through Rochester, but there's going to be some teams up there that's going to challenge them. But let's get to Bennett-Maple Grove. And I called this game. I've seen Maple Grove a few times. A lot of us here don't see a lot of them because they're so far away. But that was a good football team. And I felt that Bennett had to come out, punch them in the mouth really quick and say, we're better than you. And they didn't do that. It was reversed. And then when Bennett came back, they didn't take the momentum back. And I felt the longer that game went, Maple Grove got confidence.
I agree with you in regards of how Bennett needed to come out. I agree with you. They needed to come out and make a statement early, punch them in the mouth, as you said, and, you know, let them know that they were the team to beat. What I'm not sure about is I do agree about Maple Grove. They are consistently a good team. They're a very well-coached team, and they're a very seasoned team. Having said that, Bennett was the more talented team, and I think anybody in the stadium or anyone who's followed football this year will tell you that. Bennett was expected to win by most going away. And I do agree. Coming out to start the game, I think it was important for them to establish their dominance early, and the exact opposite happened. I mean, Maple Grove, took the opening kick, and they went 80 yards over 17 plays, and they took over half the first quarter clock on their very first drive, and they scored a touchdown. And to me, you know, that was a statement right away. And Bennett, for whatever reason, they didn't respond well for the majority of that game.
No, they didn't. And I'm wondering, as that game went on, did the coaches find themselves in a tough spot? I know Steve McDuffie very well, and, you know, he kind of took some heat for the game last year against Chickawaga. He goes down a division because the numbers in the school, and you think they're going to run away with it. And they did in the regular season. But I just had a funny feeling about Maple Grove. I thought they were taking them lightly, and look, Maple Grove, seeing them up close, that's a fun offense to watch. I like how they played. That they weren't as big. They were just hard-nosed football players. And I think Bennett took them lightly, but these guys didn't back down. And I don't think Bennett was ready for the punch back in the face. And when they did get punched back in that overtime, I just think they killed themselves with penalties. And there are some iffy calls in that game. But, look, Maple Grove was around to benefit from those calls when they shouldn't have been.
Oh, I could agree with you more. And, you know, to set this up, going even back to media day at the Ralph a couple days before the game, pregame interviews with the coaches and a couple of the players, you just you know, what you allude to, you kind of got a sense that Bennett might have been a little bit, not maybe a ton, but a little bit overconfident. And, you know, perhaps Maple Grove played up the opponent real well. Because, I mean, if you talk to Coach Fisher, I'm telling you, my first thought when I spoke to him, the sense that I got was, I'm speaking to a man who doesn't believe his own team is going to beat Bennett. And obviously, I couldn't be more wrong. You know, he was being very coy about it. But, you know, you should know better. You know, you said it. They're just a very good seasoned team, and they play good, sound, fundamental football. And I think Bennett rolled over so many teams throughout the season that when things didn't go their way early, they were rattled. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, there was one sequence where Bennett got called for a delay of game, and they compounded that penalty immediately after with an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty on the sideline after a delay of game penalty. I mean, they did a lot of things that were self-inflicted to shoot themselves in the foot. Now, you know, we all know now that, you know, Coach McDuffie had a big problem with the referees after the game, and I will say there were a couple calls that they were bad calls. I mean, they were bad calls. There was a hitting the defenseless receiver penalty that was called against Bennett on a drive that ended up culminating in a Thunder Dragon touchdown. Looking at the replay, it wasn't a good call. Having said that, you know, you got to be able to bear down in big moments, and it just seemed like Bennett they got out of their comfort zone, which credit to Maple Grove, they took them out of their comfort zone. And they they played very uncharacteristic football.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the interviews are that's a very pointed point. I watched both of them on the Buffalo News. Fisher was like, you know, we got to play this team. We just hope we survive. And McDuffie kind of caught me off guard, and I was kind of concerned because he was talking like he pretty much said, no disrespect to Maple Grove, but we got to, you know, finish business this time. And I immediately thought, I didn't like that response on tape because – I felt that he thought this was going to be a game they could win. And look, it was a game that should have been a win, but what surprised me in that game, for all the talk of team speed, Maple Grove at times looked faster.
Oh, their defense was fast. I was blown away and shocked by how fast Maple Grove's defense was. I mean, I thought McDuffie, Bishop, you know, some of those guys, they'd get to the edge and there would be nothing. Brandon Brown, I thought, you know, I didn't think Maple Grove would be able to stop it. They did. They were much, much faster than I thought. And they play very sound, gap, consistent, reliable defense. I mean, they were playing responsible defense. They weren't running all over the place. They were staying at home. And, you know, they just frustrated them. And going back, again, to the pregame, I agree with you. It just, you got a sense that Bennett thought this game was over before it started. Now, certainly he did not say that.
No.
But you just got the sense that's the way they were feeling. And then this is not just the coaching staff. I'm talking to players as well. They walked on that field like they owned it, which they should, and they did own any field they walked on this year, you know. But they just, to me, it comes back to over and over, I'll say it time and time again, I just don't think they responded well to adversity. They faced adversity right from the opening drive. I'm going to be honest with you. There were many people, I was in the press box for the game, there were many people who thought that game was going to be over before the half. And going into this series, all five games, if you could have told me the day before, pick one game that you think is going to be a blowout, 10 times out of 10, I would have told you Bennett winning would have been my pick.
Yeah, you know, and after the game, I tell you, I felt good for Maple Grove because they were the underdog. I mean, they shouldn't have won that game, but they did. And I'm telling you, watching the game, I was pulling for Bennett. But then as I watched Maple Grove, I started liking them. I said, this is a hard-nosed team. These guys, I like the play calling. I mean, let's go. I mean, look, some people told me Bennett got out-coached a little bit in that overtime. But I'm not going to go that far. I think they were surprised they were even in an overtime. And the longer that game went, Maple Grove got more confidence in. You know, on to the next game. I mean, let's talk about really quick before you bring the kid on to talk roundtable. And if you want to stick around for Bill's roundtable, you can. But let's talk about the big game, which I thought was a toss-up. I thought this game was lost on the sideline for two reasons. And I'll tell you, but Ken West, Orchard Park, that was a good football game. And
sure was.
Ken West really improved from the first game. And I'm telling you, at certain parts of that game, Ken West could have very easily been up by 10 points, maybe two touchdowns at the half. But what do you think happened in that game?
Well, you are right. It was a good game. And Kenmore West very much improved from the first time they played in the opening game. I was at the first game, and they lost 28-0. And to be honest with you, Orchard Park looked like they were on a different level that first game. Ken West didn't belong on the field that night. It was just a bad night for them. It was early in the season. They didn't play well. Fast forward to this week, complete opposite. I thought Kenmore West was as good, if not better, than Orchard Park. I really do feel that way. They played great in the first half. For whatever reason, they got away from, I believe, what got them there. Their quarterback, he ended up throwing 55 times for the game. I can't remember personally covering a game where I've seen a quarterback throw 55 times, and especially in a game where that team was winning for a lot of the game or within a score until the very last 3 minutes of the game. They just kept throwing and throwing. They got it completely away from their running game. They were having success on a lot of hitch passes to Jahmyr Lynch, to Terrell. And for whatever reason, they got away with it in the second half. It almost felt like Orchard Park was goading them into making bad decisions. So I do agree. I got all the respect in the world for the coaching staff at Ken West. It was a remarkable year for them. I mean, first time playing Durrell for a title in 19 years. So it was an outstanding season for Kevin West. And I don't want to take anything away from them at all. And, you know, the quarterback, D'Angelo, he played well. The first half, I thought he was phenomenal. I thought he might have been the best player on the field in the first half, to be honest with you. He made a lot of great throws, and he fought through an ankle injury that's bothered him for weeks. And it just in the second half, everything seemed to get away from them. They had one or two turnovers, and then it just became a snowball effect. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't understand at the time was I couldn't understand why they kept going to the air instead of trying to slow the game down.
Ken West didn't do that all year, caught me off guard, and I was saying, when do you change a quarterback? Lynch was having a phenomenal night at receiver, but D'Angelo healthy, I think West wins that game because there are certain times where he would have ran, where he couldn't just run. After the second interception, I was thinking, okay, coaches, go to plan B. Let's milk the clock. Let's keep it close. We got a good field goal kicker. Let's keep it close. I really think, look, I'm not being biased when my kid plays on that team. I'm telling you what. A healthy Walker, West probably wins that game. Not just that, to me, what hurt them was the kickoff return because Orchard Park in the first half did nothing on offense, really. It was all West. They could have made a cushion just enough to hold them off to the second half. I thought West lost the game. Orchard Park did come back and win it because they did make some big plays. But Kenmore West, as far as possession, I would bet in that game they had more possession. Yet you had these Orchard Park – there's a powerhouse football team on their heels, and then you let them come back in the second, and then even then it was only 27-20, you know what I'm saying, with all the picks.
Right.
So, I mean, after the game, I was talking to a guy, and I said, look, this game was a good game. Man, I just wish, the coaches would have made a coaching change. Look, Jahmyr Lynch has all the JV records at Canisius. Everyone forgets that. He could throw. He's a good quarterback. He'll probably be quarterback next year. He had a phenomenal night at receiver. I think we needed someone who could, when the pocket collapsed, run. D'Angelo couldn't do that, and he was forcing the bad throws. I don't believe you leave a kid in that long for seven picks. Am I wrong?
Right. I'll tell you what. I feel you're absolutely right about the ankle. That made all the difference in the world. I mean, he would start to scramble. He could move a couple steps. He was in and out of the pocket well, but he just didn't have it in him to be able to run, and that definitely hurt him. I will say this about Lynch. He was having such a big game at receiver that Orchard Park did not have an answer for him. I mean, he tied a Section 6 finals record with 11 catches, and he had, I believe, 165 yards. They couldn't stop him. What I would say that surprised me the most is when things started to snowball in the second half, I was very surprised that Kenmore West didn't start going to a wildcat formation at all with Terrell Ford at quarterback, that like they did to close out the Lancaster game the week before.
Yeah.
When Johnson couldn't go anymore on his ankle. That was very effective against Lancaster. And if nothing else, I thought it would have slowed the game down, and I felt like Kenmore West's defense was playing well enough that they could have won the game. But they kept throwing the ball and going through the air. And I feel like Orchard Park kind of suckered them into some bad passes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, seen a lot of football games, and I don't think I've ever seen a team turn the ball over 7 times in one half.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened, unfortunately, for
Ken
West.
And but, Patrick, here's my point. Even with that, it was only 27-20. See what I'm saying? I don't I mean, I left the game scratching my head. How did Orchard Park win this game? And then I started breaking it down into sections. And then I looked at the sidelines. I thought our coaching staff completely went – they imploded. Let's be honest. They imploded.
Sure.
The running game,
sure.
Terrell Ford got you there. When did Ken West become a 55-attempt passing team? Never. Ever. But yet they did that. And I'm telling you, Patrick, I was upset a little bit.
I don't know many teams, period, that throw the ball 50 times or 55 times. Yes, they are a good running team. They're a very athletic running team, and I believe Orchard Park would have had problems. I believe they gave up on the run too quick. And the one criticism I would have, which is to you know, extend on your point, is that the game was close. I mean, you look at the stats. If you looked at a play chart and you didn't watch that game, you would think Ken Russ was down 17 to 20 points in the second half. That was never the case. I mean, they just kept – I was blown away at how much they just kept throwing the ball. Coaches might have, you know, maybe they saw something on film that they thought they could exploit. And for a time, they did. Like I said, you know, they could not stop Jermaine. But Terrell Ford's one of the best players in Western New York. You know, he's a legitimate Connelly Cup candidate. And I believe he only had 6-7 touches in the second half. And, you know, that blows my mind. And you're right, the Kenmore West defense, they played well enough to win. I mean, Orchard Park scored on the opening drive. And then after that, they didn't do much on offense. They got a kick return. An 80-yard kick return after Ken West drove down and kicked the field goal. And besides that, I mean, Orchard Park, they scored on a touchdown pass about halfway through the third quarter, which put them up one. And, you know, from there, it was just Kevin West turned the ball over. Every possession was resulted in a turnover. They turned the ball over 7 times and a half. I mean, 5 interceptions and 2 lost fumbles. And I'm not going to put that on the quarterback. He was injured. And I think in high school, you know, you're putting too much on a quarterback to ask him to throw the ball that many times. When you throw the ball 30-some times in one half of football, bad things are going to happen more times than not, especially at this level. And when you have the best running back or one of the best runners in Western New York, you got to utilize them more. And I just didn't feel like they did that enough.
So let me ask you a question. Congrats to Coach Dean Tundra and Orchard Park, you know. But to me, I watched Orchard Park for a lot of years. To me, this isn't their strongest team. To me, this is their most – If you have the right athletes in the right spots, they're very beatable. Pittsburgh showed that. Ken West gave them troubles. I don't see them leaving Rochester. As good as Danica is, as good as that team is, they don't have that, except for the quarterback to me, not that standout guy as a threat against other athletes. They're not the biggest team. They're not the fastest team, but they run their system really well. I don't think that cuts it up in Rochester. I mean, how do you see them when they go play Aquinas?
I don't. I agree with you. I don't think they leave Rochester either. I will say this. I'm going to give them a lot of credit. They are a very sound team, and they don't beat themselves. You know, if you're going to beat them, you got to go out and you're going to have to take it from them. They're not going to beat themselves. One of the themes I believe at the Ralph over this weekend was I saw two teams, for sure, maybe three teams if you want to count Burgard. In fact, I will count Burgard, that I felt beat themselves more than the other team took it away from them. Orchard Park, you're going to have to beat them. And I do like their quarterback a lot. I like Dylan Jacob. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks to come around in a while. You know, and he's only a junior, and he's going to get better next year. But talent-wise, no, this is not one of their best teams. I mean, it's their first championship since 2012. Hats off to them. Fantastic season, and it was well-deserved. You know, but this doesn't compare to the teams of the mid-2000s or even, you know, the teams of 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. So I give the coaching staff a lot of credit. You know, I was saying to myself, if we win this game, Aquinas is going to beat us, but we can – I thought West – I said this halftime. I said, if West wins this game, they're not going to win in Rochester, but they can give Aquinas, you know, certain things to worry about in the skill position spots that Orchard Park can't. Now, Orchard Park's a much better coach team on the sidelines. They're a good coaching staff. They're going to have them prepared. They just won't have the horses to get it done, and that's what's going to happen, I think, up there. When Pittsburgh beat them, I called a little bit of that game, and I said they just can't – they don't have the athletes. But here, they're just – you know, Rochester's tough. Look, I don't care who came from up here. Double A, Rochester got the teams this year, and no one's going to win. I mean, they may. I mean, I don't think Aquinas is going to win the state. I think there's some teams downstate that might give them a hard time, but it's just too tough for Western New York right now. I think next year it turns around. I think next year is a toss up, and Double A North. I put Ken West probably winning the North again, even though they lose a lot. There's stuff coming back that the coaches only play like 13 to 14 kids on offense and defense. That Tyler Eichmann, Lynch, Jalel. Ken West loses a lot. They're not going to be the Ken West of this year. You're not going to replace Ford, but it's going to be a good team. And I don't know, man. Lancaster might be tough, but every time I say that, when they play an athletic team, their problem is athletes, I think. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong here. Lancaster, as good as they were, I watched two of their games that they can't compete with fast kids, and Lockport almost, you know, knocked them off in the first round.
I agree. And, you know, to the last thing I'll say about Ken West is it really, truly a shame that D'Angelo Walker Johnson's ankle was hurt, because his strength was being able to run with the football. And the last two quarters of the Lancaster game and all of the Orchard Park game at the Ralph, he just couldn't do it. And maybe he avoids a couple of those interceptions he could take off with his feet. I honestly believe if he does, Kenmore West wins that game. Could they get out of Rochester? Probably not. You never know.
No,
you know, they're a dangerous team. And when you have playmakers, anything could happen. I say the same thing about South Park. South Park reminds me an awful lot of Kenmore West, with the exception of, you know, they probably had this year's Connolly Cup winner because Tyree Brown's just an incredible quarterback. But they're the same kind of team. And, you know, South Park, they nearly beat Canisius. They're a good team. If there's one team that could get out of Rochester, I would say it's them. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but they have a lot of good playmakers, and they remind me of Ken West in that aspect.
I tell you what, Seneca East, I felt bad for them because they're a good team. They just didn't match up in certain positions with South Park. And people were saying they're not a team that can come back. Well, they scored a lot of points on South Park. Everyone forgets that. But South Park just had a little bit too much for them.
They sure did. And as it was the same team as the first time they played. South Park got off to a big lead. West Seneca East battled back, got within the score, and then South Park would blow away. I agree with you. I love West Seneca East. John Dolak was absolutely one of my favorite players to watch this year. Both ways, hard-nosed running back, but hell of a linebacker, just a really good football player and a good kid. And they did have a good team, a very good team, but they just could not match up against South Park. Their defensive secondary, they just didn't have guys who were big and athletic enough to be able to keep up with kids like David Thomas and Daryl Moore. And you saw it both times that they played.
Yeah, just couldn't do it. And, you know, but I think, you know, all in all, great playoffs. I think people who went to the Ralph got a treat. Maple Grove, the Ken West game, Burgard. No one got really blown out, per se. And they were all competitive games. And,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I completely agree. I'll tell you, I think the theme this year, was, honest to God, it was turnovers. You really saw firsthand in the air time and time again, and it's true. You know, you win a turnover battle more times than not, you're going to win the football game. And I think there were teams that got outplayed, but they won the turnover battle, and they won the game. You know, Orchard Park, they got seven turnovers.
I know.
Kenmore West's defense, they forced three turnovers, and they still lost the turnover battle by four. You know, that's the difference in the game right there. I'll tell you, the Burgard-Cheektowaga game, I thought Burgard was hands down the better team that football game. They were the underdog, but to me, they were the better team. They scored 16 points in the first quarter, but then the second quarter came, and they started turning the ball over. They turned the ball over three times in the second quarter. Cheektowaga took advantage. They scored two touchdowns before the half, right back in the game, and they ended up winning by three, Cheektowaga. So, I mean, you know, that was a big part of the Ralph was turnovers, and then the other part was composure. And going back to Bennett, I just don't believe that they kept their composure enough. They got rattled, and I don't think they played their game, and it cost them.
Yeah, it did cost them. But Patrick, I want your thoughts on the Bills really quick here. I'm going to bring in the kid, Coles, for the Bills talk really quick. To me, the Buffalo Bills, not being from here, look, I'm a Philly guy. From Philly. Eagles are my team. I'm kind of going to disown them because they're doing really bad. But as far as the Bills, was a must-win game, kid. And do you think now the Bills are back on track with Tyrod in there? Or do you think the Bills still have some issues? Or they look good against a team that's not playing that well? They got the sweep, They were scoring points, but I don't think the Dolphins really are a team that you could say, okay, the Bills are back. What do you think about that?
I completely agree with you. I think there's plenty left to prove. I will say it's a different offense. You have to give them credit. Their offense has looked good all year when they have their guys. They had their guys today, and the offense played. In fact, I believe 33 points, I'm pretty sure that's right about at what their average has been this season when Taylor plays points per game. So the offense is where it needs to be. The defense right now is the issue.
Kid, we think about what Patrick said. Is the offense back, and do you have still confidence that, you know, they're going to improve?
I'm going to have to say that I think that the offense is starting to get their mojo back, but I don't think that they showed anything that we didn't expect them to. Tyrod was held under 200 yards, and the rushing game came out like it was supposed to, and we finally had a 100-yard rusher, and we had two for that matter, and then Sammy Watkins had a big day. But other than that, Tyrod Taylor didn't do much. He did enough to win. He was efficient with the ball, and I just think that they're going to need to find their groove right now before this playoff stretch of, like, games that are going to determine whether we make the playoffs or not.
Yeah, Patrick, I wanted to ask you about that because he had a good point. We were talking about this for weeks here. Are the Bills a playoff team, or are they just a team that's looking better and next year is going to be their year? Because Tyrod, you know, we're debating, is he a Band-Aid or is he the real deal? Because if he's not the real deal, you don't want to find that out 2 years from now and be sitting in the same spot the Bills have been in for years, not having a quarterback. EJ, Tyrod, which one? And if it's not EJ and if you're done with him, shouldn't you get rid of him now or in the offseason to get something and see what he's worth?
Well, I believe EJ Manuel's gone after this year. I don't think there's any question about that. And I'm not going to – I don't necessarily agree about Tyrod Taylor either being done. I like what I'm seeing from him. And, you know, you only have six games with him now for a body of work because he did miss two games with the knee. But like I said, the offense is what it is with him. 33 points a game. That's a lot of points.
Yep.
And that's what they averaged every game that he started for the season. You know, I believe that the defense has let them down more than anything. I mean, they put up 32 on New England and lost. You know, the defense did not look good against the Giants. But, you know, overall this year, I think the offense has looked well. I think it might be a little too early to know what you have in Tyrod Taylor for sure. But I'll take a game like today. I don't care if it's Miami, if it's Jacksonville, if it's Dallas, whoever it is. And your quarterback completes 11 of 12 passes for a touchdown, doesn't turn the ball over, you know, got a couple big first downs with his legs, ran for 44 yards. The team ran for well over 250 yards as a team. This is the offense they signed up for in the offseason. So
yeah, but here's
my
problem.
Where the offense is.
Yeah, you know what, Patrick, you're right. I like where it's at, too, and I'm not taking any calls today, guys. I'll get back to you in a minute. Listen, here's my problem with the Bills. When they play a game where it's a measuring stick game, they falter. And that's my thing, okay? They could beat up on, you know, I don't like the Dolphins. I thought the Dolphins were all show. The Bills swept them. I'm so happy they did. I'm concerned. And, you know, kid, Patrick's happy with Tyrod, and you're kind of critical of him. Do you want him to be just a game manager, or do you want him just to, you know, to me personally, he's a game manager. I mean, there's times that there's going to be some games where he takes over. I just don't see it yet. What do you think about Tyrod? Are you okay with him being just a game manager and not turning the ball over, getting first downs, throwing a touchdown here and there? Is that okay with you, or do you want to see a little bit more if they're going to make him the main guy?
Well, let me tell you, if we run the ball like that, then all he has to do is to be a game manager. But I will say, we got on the Dolphins quick, and that caused us to run the ball more, and that opened the game up for the pass game. But me and you have talked about this. He still has not taken over a game like those elite quarterbacks do. And you saw it today. He has the talent to throw the ball down the field. It's just a matter of time and when he does. And if the big test is going to come up next week, and this Thursday night, it's going to be a short week. There's going to be a short amount of preparation. You're going to go against one of the best cornerbacks, if not the best cornerback in the league. He's going to take away your number one threat. You're basically essentially left with Robert Woods on one side and Chris Hogan, who both of them didn't even have a catch today. So I need to see that Tyrod can spread that ball around a little bit more, especially when he's going to need to next Thursday when Darrelle Revis is going to be all over Sammy Watkins. So, and Sammy Watkins has had trouble with Darrelle Revis, and we'll have to see how that pans out. But Tyrod needs to have a big game next Thursday to prove to me that he's more than just a game manager that we need him to be.
And, Patrick, you know, I hear a lot of that from the fans through emails, through just talking, Twitter. I hear a lot of that. And what is your response to that? A lot of people still aren't buying Tyrod yet because it's a short body of work. He doesn't have much really to go off of, but, you know, they don't want a game manager. It seems like, you know, they don't really want that game manager, and they haven't seen him do this against, let's say, the elite teams. I thought he did – look, the Patriots, everyone forgets that game. I mean, the Bills did good that game, but – people still want to see more from Tyrod. Is it a fair assumption?
Yeah, I believe it's a fair assumption. And I will say I agree with you. I don't think Miami is much of a measuring stick. I do believe that when they play the Jets this coming week on a short week and New England after that and, you know, a couple games on the stretch, we'll get more of a body of work. The Bills over the last, not just this year, for 14 years now, you know, they have faltered. When the stakes are the highest, they've played their worst football. They've made the most mistakes. Now, what I won't do is I won't hold Tyrod Taylor accountable or responsible for things of the past. He has played six games this year. They are 4-2 when he starts. I agree with the game manager to an extent, but he has done things by himself to help them win a game. For an example, Tennessee, the game before he went out with the injury, the team was awful. They didn't show up. He put that team on his back in the second half, and he made plays. And that's why they won that football game. If DJ Manuel is playing that game, the Bills don't win. And, you know, even today, he only threw the ball 12 times. He threw the ball 12 times because that's all he needed to throw it today. He did throw deep twice today and hit Sammy Watkins. I will say that I agree next week is going to be a different story. You don't want to get too high beating a team like Miami because I do think they're overrated. As you said, I believe they're more show. And playing the Jets is going to be a much tougher test because Darrell Revis will absolutely be on Sammy Watkins. And that's going to neutralize him. It should anyway. So, you know, Chris Hogan and Robert Woods and Charles Clay, who only had one catch early in the game, they're gonna have to make plays. And we will find out more what kind of player Tyrod Taylor could be. But I think, you know, a lot of fans put unrealistic expectations on him right now, and I think that's unfair. Given, you know, the injuries this year and everything going on with the Bills, I think he's done a good job. And to me, the biggest reason why we're sitting here with the Bills only at 4-4, talking about if they're going to be a team that can challenge for a playoff spot, has more to do with the defense and the penalties than it does the offense.
Patrick, you got a huge response via my messenger. People disagree, saying that, you know, EJ can do the same thing. He took a lot of heat for missing passes in the Jacksonville game, but people felt he was unfairly judged for that. I'm going to be on the fence on that one, but people are saying he's not doing much different than what EJ did before he got hurt a few years ago, and people feel he's not getting a shake. And, yes, me and the kid talked about it. He's gone. You know, I said, if I'm his agent, it's very clear who their guy is. People just think EJ didn't get a fair shot here. I don't know if that's completely true, but what do you feel about that? Because a lot of people, kid, I'm going to let you respond to this really quick. A lot of people are saying he didn't get a shot, and they're just making Tyrod. Everything he does is gold. And some are saying EJ could do the same thing if he gets a chance.
Yeah, I've been on it saying that EJ has all the talent to be a starting quarterback in the league. He just has to work on having consistent time at the helm, but that comes through injuries his first year and then being benched after four games, which I thought was absurd last year, and then losing the starting job this year, which I thought he played better than Tyrod in the preseason, but Rex fell in love with Tyrod, and EJ hasn't had that consistent starting position and solidified, and it's been to that where he hasn't had that job security. He came in as a rookie, started the first half of the season, but if you remember, he wasn't even the starter when they first brought him in. They had Kevin Cobb as the starter, which they got from Arizona that offseason, but he has never had a whole season where they go, okay, you're our guy. We're going to ride you this year and see if we can take us to the playoffs, which hopefully some team takes a chance on him because I feel like he does have the skill set. He just has to have that consistency with playing with the ones and facing top defenses and getting the kind of experience that he should have instead of just these couple games every year that he's been getting.
Patrick, your response to that. That's a fair assumption of EJ hasn't getting a fair shake here, and pretty much the team kind of turned the corner on him.
I'm going to half agree with that. I don't believe he has had a full opportunity to develop into a starter. The injury his rookie year really hurt him, and I do agree last year. I don't think it was the right move to give a guy four games. He's a first-round draft pick. You don't give a guy four games, two of which he won, by the way, and then bench him. Maybe you pull him off that game if he's not playing well, but then you go back. So in those regards, no, I don't believe he has had a fair shake to prove that he could be a starter. Now, having said that, my personal belief is that I've seen enough to know that I don't think he could be a starting quarterback in this league, or certainly not on this team anyway. You know, we could sit here for hours and we can go over stats and things like that, but at the end of the day, it's what hurts EJ Manuel more than anything to me are three things. He's late on his throws, and I mean, it's happened a lot. He's late on his throws, and he's consistent. And this is going all the way back to training camp last year when receivers were complaining behind closed doors that they were getting the ball late, getting killed by linebackers because he's just late with his reads. He also locked in on one receiver too much. You saw that in the Jacksonville game. I don't want to crucify the guy over one game, but the Jacksonville game in many ways has been indicative of his playing time. I mean, it was just awful. He would lock in on one guy and throw the ball no matter what. And then the other thing is you want your quarterback to have fire in his belly. You want him to be a leader. And I don't buy E.J. Manuel as a leader on this team. He lacks, for me anyway, he lacks some of the fire and the passion that it takes to make it, to be a leader for your team. And above all that, I just, again, and apparently I'm in the minority here, and I'll accept that. I can live with that. But I believe Tyrod Taylor was a far better quarterback. And I think while he shouldn't be put on a pedestal after six games, he's got a lot to prove. And it could go downhill very fast. And we'll start to find out Thursday when they play the Jets and then the Patriots after that. But he's making plays. And he's not just making plays with his arms. He's making plays with his legs. If today's game, he had a couple first downs early in the game that should have been sacked. And he turned them into long runs. And that's a dimension that he gives you that the Bills haven't had in years.
All right, Patrick. Look, I'm asking you a question before you go about Carolina. But, kid, I want you to respond to that because you're on the EJ side. And – pretty strong opinions there that pretty much point to him not being a leader, not being a starting quarterback. I take it you disagree with that?
Yeah, I feel like he does have that fire. I think you saw that when he played that Carolina game a couple years ago where he let the team back and then threw that pass to Steve Johnson in the end zone. And then I agree that he is late on his throws, and rightfully so. The receivers had the right to complain, and I believe that's true, but with experience, that will change. I feel like if he's given the consistent time as a starter, that will start to progress and get better. And just the fact that I think that EJ does have the arm talent, and you see it when you saw it with the Marcus Easley throw, you saw it with the Robert Woods throw, that he can put the ball where it needs to be. It's just a lack of consistency, and that's what I think that could progress is if he were to give that solidified starting role and to have consistent playing time throughout the year to just progress as a quarterback and a leader.
Yeah, it's a good point. But I'm going to ask you guys a really quick question. Patrick, I've been saying this for weeks. I see a transition of the quarterback position. I truly believe a run quarterback first isn't going to make it, and you see it in San Francisco. I think Kaepernick lost his job. Even though they're in a huge spot now in his contract, but I think he lost his job. I think Big Ben in Pittsburgh, just due to injuries, may have lost his job. You see a lot of quarterbacks now who are coming in, and I think it's good for these teams who drafted right, who got these guys coming in, and they're progressing when you have an aging star like Big Ben, when you have a guy who I felt didn't deserve that big contract just because of what he did. I was never a fan of Fitzpatrick, wow. You know what I'm talking about, in San Francisco. I wasn't a fan of him because I don't like those kind of quarterbacks. But I will say this, Cam Newton, I said it earlier on this show and I've been saying it, They're 8-0 now. You got to take him serious and the Carolina Panthers serious. And if it weren't for Tom Brady, he's the MVP so far right now to me. He looks a lot better. He looks like he turned the corner. And to everyone's surprise, I didn't see this coming. Did any of you see this coming? And Patrick, do you think they're for real, or do you think they're going to falter? As of right now, I don't see it.
I think they're for real. And I agree with you. Cam Newton's second in line for the MVP if the season ended today. He's not just a running quarterback. He's got a great arm. He's a big, strong guy. He's a smarter quarterback than people have given him credit for.
Yeah.
You look at him and you just think athlete. And he is an athlete. He's a hell of an athlete. But he's a good quarterback, and they're a good football team. I think they're for real. It's still today was impressive, and you can't take that away from them. I mean, they still got things to prove, but I buy it. I buy Carolina being for real this year.
And, Kid, what do you think? I'm on the bandwagon. How do you think about Carolina?
I think the NFC is too strong for them to get to the Super Bowl. I do like how much they've improved. I still think that defense is probably up there with the top two in the league with Denver. But I just feel like they lack the outside weapons that give to Cam Newton to throw to. And I feel like that the NFC is just too strong. A healthy Arizona or a healthy Seattle will just – I feel like with the experience that they've had, will come to crunch time and beat the Carolina Panthers. I do love the hype of the Carolina Panthers, and I definitely did not see that coming, but it's good to see, and I feel like Cam Newton just needs more help. It hurts that Kelvin Benjamin's on IR, and they don't have many behind him, but I'm not completely sold on the Panthers. I thought they played an outstanding game today, and I thought it was the story of the day today, but I just don't see them winning in that tough NFC conference.
Wow. You know, I'm that's a good take, but I'm kind of shocked at that one. I think they fit very well in the NFC, me personally, but, you know, Patrick, your response to that, I mean, he has some good points, but I think they're strong enough. This is my opinion.
He has some great points, and you know, they haven't done it before, so it's very easy to be skeptical, and I can certainly understand why. I don't agree, because I don't think that the NFC is quite that tough this year. And the teams, and here's the big thing, and this does matter. Carolina, you know, they're heading towards having home field. That's big. Can they win in Seattle in January? No, I don't think they would. But can they win in Carolina in January? Sure, I think they could. Arizona's been very good this year, but, you know, Carolina could beat them at home. The NFC East is really nothing, at least at this point right now this year. And I mean, Green Bay's tied with Minnesota halfway through the season. I definitely think Carolina could be the team to come out of the NFC this year. I mean, it's football nowadays, you know, you become good quick. And you go from nothing to champions, you know, seemingly overnight. And I don't know, just kind of starting to feel like a destiny that Carolina is going to be around at the end this year. And again, I think the big thing is getting home field. I think if they get home field, then I do believe they could be, which by the way, you know, Seattle's 4-4, and it's not a given they're even going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are seasoned, they're proven, they're great defense. I'd hate to play them in Seattle, but they're not going to play them in Seattle. They're going to play them in Carolina if they meet them in the playoffs at this point. So, you know, they got a 3-game lead now. Atlanta lost, so they got a 3-game lead on Atlanta. Home field advantage is looking good, and you know, in the NFC, I think that's going to be big in the playoffs.
Quick email for both you guys. They didn't want me to answer this, but I want you guys to answer. What's the deal with Seattle? What is the problem this year, Kid? I'm gonna start with you. He wants to know, how did they fall so fast from, you know, the 2 years ago that they were on top?
I think it's going to be lack of consistency with the continuity of the defense. I feel like that defense, the whole Cam Chancellor thing, just had a huge setback. It held a dark cloud over the offseason. They didn't really prep right. They didn't have that continuity on defense. And then you saw it in the first two games, and Cam Chancellor proved that he was an intricate part to that defense. But overall, I feel like their offense is just as good as it was last year. I feel like their defense is just starting to find it. If you remember, they lost to Kansas City mid-season last year, and people were like, oh, well,
Seattle's not the same team as they were. I mean, they're the Super Bowl champs, but they're not the same team as they were last year. But they came on strong through November and December, which I feel like they're poised to do that again. And it just – they needed this bye week to just cloud of the whole first half. I think they're lucky to be 4-4 with the Detroit game that they had, but they're primed to just make this strong comeback, and I feel like they could end up with a wild card spot and be the dark horse in the NFC, even though I can't believe I'm saying like Seattle's a dark horse, but I feel like if they squeak in there, they're going to be the team that nobody wants to play because they have been there and they have proven that they can win it.
Yeah, you know, this is where Patrick's point comes in real good, though. Home field advantage for Carolina and Seattle's a dark horse. So, yeah, that does make sense. Now, Patrick, your thoughts on that from the email from Jeff. What do you think happened to the to the Seahawks and how they fell? Because I'm shocked they're 4-4. I mean, they didn't look that good this year, and they still don't look that good. And I don't know if they even make the playoffs, but like the kid just said, they kind of did this last year and came on strong in the late months.
Sure. I mean, you know, a lot of it's pressure. They've been in the Super Bowl 2 straight years. I'm sure there was a hangover losing in the way they did to New England last year. Chancellor being out, that surely that hurt. You know, they're 4-4 right now, and, you know, they've won a couple games that were close. But having said that, they got 4 losses this year. 3 of them are by 4 points or less. They lost to Green Bay by 10, but aside from that, they lost to St. Louis by a field goal. They lost to Cincinnati at Cincinnati by a field goal, and they lost to Carolina by 4. You know, they're still in decent shape. They're 4-4, and they're in a bye now, and they got Arizona at home coming off a bye. They're 2 games behind Arizona in the standings. They play them twice. So, you know, I'm not even close to writing Seattle off this year. Their problem is definitely – the record shows it is what it is right now. They've been inconsistent. But – again, I would definitely not write them off. They got Arizona still to come twice. They won't get home field advantage, though. And, you know, I'll say that again when it comes to Carolina. I think Carolina is going to be very tough to beat. I'll say this. I wasn't sold on Carolina until the last couple weeks. But, you know, they beat Seattle. They beat Green Bay. They're tough. And they're more than just Cam Newton. They got a hell of a defense. They got a good running game. They're around. They're not going anywhere.
We got 5 more minutes. Got a quick email again about the Jets. People are asking right now, if the Bills make the playoffs, what's their best scenario to make the playoffs, and can they win once they get there? I think they almost got to – I'm not saying they got to win out. And I mean, it's tough. I mean, what, Miami's 0-4? I don't know. I mean, what is their scenario to make it the playoffs? I mean, you have Denver losing, and if you look at the whole AFC, I mean – I don't think, besides New England, there's not a real powerhouse in my eyes, except for Cincinnati also, but they always falter in the playoffs. I think for some reason this year it's going to be different, but where do the Bills fit in all this, and, you know, can they squeak in? Kid.
Well, go ahead. Is this for me?
Okay. I thought you were asking him, but I feel like the best case scenario, you're going to face the AFC South winner, and to win that game, I think it would be a toss-up because you saw how Indy was strong today against a good defense, probably the best in the league in Denver. But I feel like if the Bills were to play Indy again, that it would be kind of similar to how they beat them the first time. And if it doesn't end up being Indy because Tennessee won, I feel like the Bills should be favored against Tennessee too, even if it is going to be in Tennessee. But other than that, if they get matched up against someone like Denver, if Denver doesn't get a first round bye because Cincinnati and New England would, I feel like that it would be tough for the Bills to go deep in the playoffs, but they're going to have to win these at least 2 of the next 3 games, which is against Kansas City, New England, and New York. But I think the biggest game of the year is the one that you have to circle is the one coming this Thursday, and is kind of defining for our season, because if we lose this game, we're just going to be a little bit farther back from New York. And I feel like that with Pittsburgh and Oakland on the rise, that it's going to be really tough to make it in the playoffs.
Yeah, Patrick, that's a good point. That's a lot of pressure on Tyrod too, man. I mean, you think about it. This is like every game's do or die for him a little bit. I mean, what do you think about that, Patrick? But what he said, it's just hearing him say that, it's like it's kind of tough to – I mean, they got to win. I mean, let's be honest. They're in a situation where they got to win these games. And Tyrod's going to have a ton of pressure on him, the coaching staff, the whole team. Do you think they could do it?
Well, in terms of pressure, that's good. We want to see, can he handle it? And we're going to find out. And we'll start to find out this Thursday. You know, playing the Jets is big. We played the Jets twice. We'll probably have to sweep the Jets. If we lose to the Jets, that's five losses. And we go to New England the following week. So you can almost chalk that up as a six. They'd have to win out to finish 10-6. It's going to take 10 wins to get in the playoffs, so almost certainly. So they can't afford to lose this game. In terms of the playoffs, you know, you're looking at the Jets. They're 5-3 right now. Pittsburgh's 5-4. And Oakland, you know, they lost today, so they're 4-4. And Buffalo, you're probably, you know, those are probably the four teams that are going to be fighting for two playoff spots or two wild cards. So playing the Jets is critical, playing them twice. You beat them twice, that puts you ahead in the tiebreaker and you're in good shape. You lose Thursday, again, you're probably going to lose at New England. I mean, I don't think there's anyone who expects the Bills to win in New England. And, you know, you're talking a 4-6 record, and it's almost wiped out from there. They pretty much would have to win out. So this Jets game's huge.
Patrick, real quick, cut you off real quick, Patrick, and I'll let you go back. I don't think six losses get you in the playoffs this year. That's just my opinion.
I do. I mean, there's a lot of teams this year that are, you know, that have under 500 records. Seattle, Kansas City, you know, Houston's only 3-5. Baltimore's 2-6 at this point. Miami's 3-5. I think 10 wins is going to get you in the playoffs. There's a chance that 9 wins get you in the playoffs. However, you don't want to have 9 wins unless you know that you're going to get a tiebreaker in the conference. And losing games against the Jets or other AFC teams, you know, if they lose to the Jets in New England, that's two AFC losses. You can almost kiss any tiebreaker away. So you're talking having to win out if they don't win these next if they don't win at least on Thursday.
All right, quick 2 minutes before we're over. Kid, real quick, if they miss the playoffs now, if they miss the playoffs this year, what do they go for in the draft? Because, look, if Tyrod doesn't get into the playoffs, which people are going to say, you guys know Buffalo fans, what do? Do you go after another quarterback? You're going to ship E.J. out. The Bills are in a very tough spot, I think, and Riley has a lot of pressure on him to make superficial moves, big-time moves in the offseason, because we still don't know about our quarterback. And if you miss the playoffs, the doubt's going to start creeping in. Kid, quickly on this, what do you think the Bills got to do if they don't make the playoffs?
Just try to draft a couple quarterbacks late rounds, try to bolster up the defensive, the middle-level defense, and create more depth on the offensive line. I think that's the glaring needs that we have on our team. And then just kind of like retool and make sure that we're in the best spot to win it next year. But I mean, I think it's too early to be talking about what's going to happen, but if we were, then I feel like you have to go get two quarterbacks in the draft or in off season, and then kind of get another linebacker. You have Manny Lawson, but you're going to need another one there, and you're going to need depth. We don't have much depth at the linebacker position, and just offensive line, I feel like it's just too inconsistent. You're just going to need as many people as you can over there.
All right, kid. Patrick, I'm going to leave you with the last word here. I know we're looking ahead, but I'm a guy that looks ahead. What if, okay, the Bills don't make it? What has to be done in this year's draft? And is Wiley under a lot of pressure?
I believe the Bills don't make the playoffs, and possibly if they do make the playoffs, I think Wiley's gone. I think that's one thing that I think, even though it's far too early to, have official, I believe that is fact. I believe that he has a mandate. You know, you've made a lot of moves and a lot of decisions, and you're going to be accountable for it. So I think if the Bills miss the playoffs this year, I don't think Doug Whaley will be back as a general manager. I don't mean to play fanboy again, and apparently a lot of people don't agree with me, but until he shows me that he's not capable, I believe in Tyrod Taylor. I really like this kid a lot. I think he gets he's typecasted into being nothing more than a running quarterback, and I just don't believe that to be true. I think he's making a lot of good plays with his arm, and I think he's just the kind of quarterback that this team wants right now. If he doesn't work out, well, I mean, they're gonna be looking for a quarterback in the offseason, whether he does or not, because if nothing else, they're going to need a backup. I believe they're going to draft a quarterback, but maybe they sign one in free agency, although that hasn't worked in recent years. You know, Terry Pegula said when he bought this team on the radio, I remember him saying this, one of the things that they believe in is drafting a quarterback every year. I could see that. I believe it's too early in terms of the draft, because there's too much to go. But what I will say is I do think if this team misses the playoffs, I think there'll be a new general manager next year. That's for sure.
All right, guys. Look, great show, great response, great fan participation. Kid, good job. Patrick, good job. I'd like to have you on again. Good high school stuff, good Bills talk. Fans liked it. I liked it. Had a good time here tonight. You guys, thanks for calling in, and hopefully we can have you guys come back on again.
All right, it'd be my pleasure. Thank you. Anytime.
All right. Thanks a lot, kid. I'll be talking to you later. Thank you, fans, for listening. Look, we got a few seconds here. Thank you to my sponsors, Coca-Cola, Snyder's Pretzels of Pennsylvania. We'll see you guys later. If you didn't hear the show, just go on the Facebook page, Trenton White Sports. It'll be posted. Hit the link. Pass it on to your friends. Hear the podcast. Good show tonight. Take care, guys. We will talk to you this Tuesday. Take care.